This morning, in the second hour of the show, we will return to a topic that we have discussed before, and I'm sure now and again we'll get back to it, and that is electric utility deregulation. And we'll try to approach it and the whole subject of power generation from a direction that's a little bit different than we have done in the past. This morning, we'll be talking about public power. And our guest for the program is Doc Mueller. He is Manager of Communications and Public Affairs for the Illinois Municipal Electric Agency. It is a nonprofit organization made up of 39 municipalities in the state. The function of the agency is to provide wholesale electricity to those communities, and then they in turn resell them to their customers. And we'll be talking about the whole idea of public power as and look at how it fits into the mix of power generation and provision here in the state. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. You have questions at any point here, you can give us a call. Mr. Mueller, hello.
Yes, hello, David. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And thanks very much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Congratulations on your 20th anniversary.
Thank you. Let's talk about the some of the basics about the Illinois Municipal Electric Agency.
Sure.
Maybe I'll just ask as a general question, again, from the top, to for you to talk a little bit about what it is.
Sure. And your summary was excellent. We've been around about 15, 16 years now, which is a much shorter period of time than the municipal electric utilities themselves. But I'll talk a little bit about us, and we can talk about public power history if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 70s, wholesale prices were sort of spiraling out of control for these systems that, by and large, were either generating power from small plants themselves or buying power wholesale off the electric grid. The 1973 oil shocks were just one of the things that contributed to these increase in prices. The cities essentially got together and said, we want to provide power for ourselves. And to do so, they had to get a piece of legislation passed through the General Assembly that allowed for our creation, because there was no mechanism for them to actually work together through some sort of intergovernmental agreements. So we were created by an act of the General Assembly back in 83. The organization came together in 84. We began to sell our first power in 86. And we really came of age in the early 1990s when we purchased a portion of a fully scrubbed coal-fired power plant down near Louisville, Kentucky. Part of our power supply is made up by long-term contracts with some of the investor-owned utilities in the state. And we maintain some small power supply plants in our member communities around Illinois. But essentially, our only task is to provide the lowest price power in an environmentally sensitive way and with the most reliability to our members. And at this time, of those 39 you mentioned, we are selling power to 28 of the municipal electric systems in the state. And that works out to about 450 megawatts of power, which is it doesn't make us Commonwealth Edison, but it's pretty good size for us.
Of the 39 members, how many do some of their own generation?
The main generating municipality in the state of Illinois is Springfield. Springfield is the largest municipal system in the state, and it really is the only one that has committed to have enough generation on hand to provide for all of its own needs. If you've ever been to Springfield, you will probably have been out by the lake, and you'll notice that there is a power plant facility there. Well, that is owned and operated by City Water, Light, and Power of Springfield. Most of the other municipalities either buy all of their power off the grid, or they may maintain a small amount of generation for emergency situations or for summer peaking. But really, Springfield is the only one that you would think of as committed to provide all its own power for itself.
Hmm. Are the members, are they places that had been traditionally had either been out there buying on the open market or had been doing their own generation, or at the time that the agency came together, were there municipalities that maybe for the first time were saying, you know, maybe we could do this ourselves.
Yeah, all three of those things happens to be true. You have some small municipalities. City of Breeze, Illinois, comes to mind, which is down not too far from St. Louis, that had a power plant sufficient in size to provide for that municipality's needs, but the fuel costs were beginning to get them, and they wanted to have the so-called economies of scale where they could come together with other communities, buy in mass. It's the same thing as buying tires for a trucking company. If a trucking company goes out and can sign a contract to buy 1,000 tires, it's going to get a better unit price than somebody like you and me that goes out and just needs one for the right front. So these communities came together, and it's really this economies of scale by buying in bulk. Each of the units, each kilowatt hour, is less expensive. So really, you had cities that were providing their own generation that decided that this was a good way to do it, to combine with other members. You had people that had done nothing but buy off the grid and were really sort of stuck with one supplier who wanted the flexibility of buying from sort of a larger pool. So really a little bit of all of that.
Mm-hmm. And the members, are they some of these not only using power to do things like making sure that the street lights are lit and public buildings are taken care of, but then are they also providing power to residential users?
That is indeed the definition of a municipally operated electric system. And we can get into a little history here. The short answer to the question is yes. The city of Springfield actually provides retail service to industries, commercial businesses, and residences. Near you, City of Rantoul, and the City of Farmer City are both municipally operated electric systems, and they buy wholesale power. Both of those happen to be purchasing members of our organization. They buy power from us. That power is then resold to their end-use customers over wires that the city owns and maintains. And I think that's a key point as we move through this discussion. When you think about a municipal system, the municipality actually owns and maintains the poles, the wires, the transformers, the substations, the generating units, because some of these entities do have generating units, for the benefit of their citizens. And without the profit motive entering into it, because they also operate on a not-for-profit basis. Mm-hmm. I want to go ahead and say we don't have any problem with investor-owned utilities which operate on a for-profit basis. I mean, that is a legitimate and long-standing segment of the industry. We just do things differently and have done so for a long time. Not to bore you, Farmer City, I believe, has been the longest functioning municipal electric system in the state. They go back to about 1887. You will find that most of these municipalities actually began providing electricity around the turn of the century, before the industry had really gelled into the form that we see it now.
Well, maybe I should introduce again for people who might have tuned in, the guest for this part of Focus. We're talking with Doc Mueller. He's Manager of Communications and Public Affairs for the Illinois Municipal Electric Agency, which, as we have explained, it's an agency. It's a nonprofit that it's made up of 39 members. Its main function to provide wholesale electricity to those communities, which they resell there to their end-use customers. And of these, the only one that's really geared up to be doing this on its own, that is providing power on its own, would be the City of Springfield. Sure. Some of the other cities may have some generating capacity. If you have questions about the whole idea of public power, we thought it'd be interesting. We've been talking a lot about deregulation on the show in the last few weeks. We thought it'd be interesting to examine this dimension of providing power and why some cities do it and how it is that they do it. And, of course, questions welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. We do have a caller here. That is another question that I wanted to ask, and maybe we could take care of that fairly quickly.
Sure.
And that is, when you look at what people pay, the rates that you charge, say on average, when you look at what customers of the for-profit utilities are paying for electricity, and there is a range, and then compare that with what some of the customers that get their power from your members pay. How do things compare?
Well, averages are dangerous things. You know, there's that old line about, you know, if a guy's got a foot in a bucket of ice water and a foot in a bucket of boiling water, on the average, he's comfortable. But on the average, we look really good. Our members provide power at anywhere up to 25% below the comparable rates of the investor-owned utilities. Now, let me throw a caveat into that. As you know, back in the 70s, both Commonwealth Edison and Illinois Power built nuclear-fired power plants. And that was one of the reasons that their costs were higher than everybody else's. So our municipal averages look very good compared to some of the higher-cost systems. We are still below even the lower-cost systems, which would be Ameren, CIPS, and Silco. But the margin is less for Ameren, CIPS, and Silco than it would be Illinois Power and Commonwealth Edison, but still less. And a lot of that is due to the fact that they operate on a not-for-profit basis. They essentially, rather than return a profit to shareholders, those profits are passed through to the customers as a in a reduction in cost.
Okay, let's talk with this caller we have in Belgium, line number 4. Hello.
Yes, sir. I was wondering, this might be a little off the topic, but it seems you would know as much. If I decided that, lo and behold, I found some way to suck electricity right out of the center of the ground, right here where I stand, and the people around my neighborhood, I wanted to sell to them, just in the nearby block or nearby countryside, or whatever, can a person do that?
I think the answer to that is yes, under some circumstances. In the deregulation law of 97, there are provisions for alternative retail electric suppliers. That is, an entity that goes out and provides electricity to a utility's customers over that utility's lines. And this is when things get a little muddy here.
Yeah, but I mean, you would put up your own lines. You could start a utility company that would include you and your neighbor.
You might be able to, depending upon how the city of Elgin felt about you stringing new lines down their rights-of-ways.
That's
another situation. Let me tell you how some municipal systems started. Some municipal systems started when the city decided that it wasn't happy with the service it was getting, and we're really going back to the early part of the century, and they essentially did exactly what you said. They strung a second series of lines down their right-of-ways, and they began to compete for customers door-to-door. What you're talking about is a little bit different. There would, I'm sure, be some restrictions depending upon what your municipality decided was appropriate, but technically there is no reason that something like that wouldn't work.
Obviously, you'd have to cover all the safety aspects and everything like that, but you, a person or a group of people or whatever could do that, or a municipality could decide, hey, today we're going to stop using Illinois Power and start using Joe Blow Power.
It can, and we have inquiries here. I would guess we get a half a dozen inquiries every year from municipalities that are interested in creating a municipal system. There are new municipal systems being created in other parts of the country, but the problem is both economic and political. To create a new municipally operated system is expensive. You have to do one of two things. You either have to enter into negotiations with your existing utility to purchase their facilities. Most of those companies don't want to sell. Or the city has to decide it's going to parallel build, what you and I have been talking about.
Yes.
Put in new facilities and compete door-to-door for customers. Both of those things require money, because you have to do the studies, and then obviously you have to do the bonding or whatever financing it is to buy the facilities and put them in the field. It also takes a tremendous amount of political will. Because that is something that that the city fathers and the city mothers are going to be lobbied very heavily by your incumbent utility not to do that. So there's a political aspect, there's a monetary aspect. The last time a new municipal system was created in the state, I believe, was 1955.
Oh.
And that was a little village of Greenup, Illinois, which is down in the central eastern part of the state. It can be done. It is done in other parts of the world. It is not easy.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. I guess that part of the reason for our thinking about this is looking at the fact that here in Champaign-Urbana, I believe that the franchise between the cities and the supplier here, Illinois Power, is due to come up for renewal or expire or whatever in something like 15, 16 years from now.
Right.
And that if it's the kind of thing that you might want to think about, probably you want to start now, if not last week. But I guess I do find myself wondering whether, in fact, given the realities today, there is a certain point at which you would say the community becomes too big for this practically to happen.
San Francisco's talking about it now. Mm-hmm. Now, their discussions have come out of the obvious difficulties California has been having in the last few months. It is not physically impossible to do, but you do reach a dollar level at which it becomes more difficult. Because if you go out into your community and you look at the wires in the ground, or the wires in the air, the poles, the transformers, or if you have underground facilities, you'll see those boxes in people's yards, and those are the transformers for the underground facilities. Each of those has a dollar value. All of the stuff you see, you don't see, has a dollar value, running right back to the power plants. The incumbent utility will want something for those. And really, we're moving into an era where generation, transmission, and distribution, which are the three pieces of the electric industry, are being separated.
Mm-hmm.
And Illinois Power, for instance, in the future is going to be a wires company. It is moving that direction. That means that it's going to make its money for its shareholders by the use of its wires. And it technically won't care who generates the electricity. I would think that Illinois Power would be loath to let go of wires that, especially in a community like Champaign-Urbana, where they probably will make a good return on their dollar. Now, it doesn't mean it's impossible, but as I say, I'm a big proponent, obviously, of public power. I think it works, but I don't want people to come away going, oh, well, I'll go down to City Hall next week and we'll get this ball rolling.
Sure.
Because it is practically a difficult thing to do.
Well, given the fact that as a result of this deregulation, as you say, we're moving away from the previous model, the regulated monopoly model, where one company dominated an area and they generated it, they own the transmission lines, they maintained them, they took care of the building, the servicing, one company did everything. If we're moving to the point where these functions are going to be broken up, then I wonder if, for example, say Urbana decided that they wanted to go into the generation business,
right,
then why could they not, why would they need to buy the lines if we're now moving to this point where essentially Illinois Power is going to be renting them? So that you would just say, well, okay, we'll work out a deal with Illinois Power to use the lines. We don't have to buy them. We'll just say we'll pay you for the use of them, and we'll either generate the electricity or we'll buy it someplace else.
At some point in the future, it could well be that the city of Champaign will act as a broker, mm-hmm, and will broker an energy deal for delivery to its willing citizens over Illinois Power's lines. That so-called aggregation scheme where a third-party entity acts as an agent for, in particular, residential customers, is probably the only way residential customers are honestly going to see a break out of a deregulated industry, because they will become part of a larger buying combine, which is essentially what we here at IMEA do for our member communities. We go out and buy in bulk and deliver those savings to the individual customer. It could be in the future that the city of Champaign will put out a request for proposal to various power suppliers and go out and sign up, you know, say the city of Champaign will broker an energy deal, and you know, for our citizens that sign up for this energy deal, we're going to provide energy to you at X cents per kilowatt hour. That avoids the need to actually acquire the facilities. Now, it doesn't avoid a couple other things. And when we talk about public power, we tend to talk about the cost advantages. And the cost advantages are real, and we are obviously very pleased about them. There's one other big advantage about actually owning your own wires, and that is that the people that maintain those wires are in that city, dedicated to that city. The city of Farmer City has line crews. Their only responsibility is to maintain the system that serves the people of Farmer City. Rantoul is the same. Flora, Illinois is the same. I could go down the list. Therefore, public power entities tend to be a more reliable deliverer of electricity outside the fact that the energy itself is less expensive. That is one thing that you won't get by some sort of aggregation deal for energy. You will still have the system maintained by whoever owns the system now, and that can be problematic. And one of the advantages I think municipalities that have their own power system enjoy is when it comes to economic development, because you can point an industry, you can take someone from the industry down to the garage where you have your bucket trucks and you have your line crews and you have the expertise to keep that system up and operating. And those industries know those are our guys. That they are meant just for us, and we're not going to have to call an 800 number and get people in here from maybe 40, 50 miles away. Mm-hmm. So energy is an important component of this. You won't get the reliability component simply by buying cheap energy.
Let's take another call here. We have a caller in Peoria, line 4.
Yes,
hello?
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Who owns the power plant at Sisley, Illinois? It's a slope mine that has coal down in there, and they have a belt. And the belt, they put the coal onto this belt, and it goes into the power plant.
Tell me where Sicily is, if you. I'm sorry to be ignorant. Tell me where Sicily is.
Between Pawnee and Tovey.
Okay, I am not sure. That may be a cooperative power plant down south of here, and I apologize. Sometimes the toughest thing is to say I don't know, but I really don't know. Are you interested in that from the technology standpoint?
No, but I used to live down in Jayesville, Illinois, when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a power plant there on the South Fork River, and they demolished that plant, and then they built this one over there at Sicily.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know who actually owns the Sicily plant, and I apologize for that. You are going to find, as these years go on, and this is the other side of the whole deregulation debate. You talk about power plants being demolished. Coal-fired power plants, in particular, are coming under increasing pressure from the environmental segment of the Illinois community, and you're going to see it also, I think, legislatively. And you could well see a number of Illinois coal-fired power plants either be forced to refire with natural gas or even to shut down because of more stringent environmental regulations. And that is a concern to all of us as we look at having enough generating facilities in the state to meet our load over the next few years. But I apologize, I don't know the particular answer to your question.
What are they going to do with these nuclear plants? I understand that Illinois has 11 of them.
My understanding, and I'm not an expert on nuclear power plants, is that most of these plants will be relicensed. I believe Commonwealth Edison did not relicense its Cyan plant, But most of these plants will be relicensed, and they will do everything they can to keep those online for another number of decades, because right now they are an essentially, at least as a point source, they're a non-polluting source of electricity. I mean, you still have to get around the waste removal problem, but they don't create greenhouse gases. They don't create any other forms of air pollution. And the costs of them are essentially sunk now. So I think you're going to see that the owners of those plants do everything they can to keep them online well into the future.
What about Silco now? Silco, when back in, I think it was 74, the stock was $13. Mm-hmm. And then when they wanted to buy out the company, they offered these people that bought stock at $13, $83 a share. And the people went and jumped at it. And now the cost of electricity and gas is about six times as high as it was originally.
Well, gas is certainly a problem. Of course, on your gas bill, the gas companies are allowed to pass on the cost of the commodity, and the commodity has been very expensive. I believe Silco on the electric side is still relatively reasonable, although in as much as anybody uses natural gas now, that puts upward pressure on your prices. But like many companies in Illinois, of course, Silco has been purchased, and they're now owned by an outfit called AES.
Right.
And that's the way of the future. We have some concerns about mergers, because you are concentrating the sources of generation in fewer and fewer hands, and we worry that will create fewer willing sellers in the future. But a lot of that is also beyond our control. So I hope that helps a little bit.
Well, I know, because I sold my stock back to the company for $83. I ended up coming out like a bandit.
Well, that was a good deal for you then.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. Let's go to Farmer City for someone else right here, line number one. Hello.
Hi. In response to the caller's question, the plant that he was talking about by Sicily, it's actually used to be Commonwealth Edison at Kincaid. Now, my question is your organization sort of like a municipal version of REA? And if so, that's how so? Or if not, what's the difference? And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Okay.
You bet. Let's talk a little bit about the REAs. There are comparisons that can be made. The Rural Electrification Administration was created in the 1930s to bring power to rural areas and has done a magnificent job of that, and I hope I'm right about this. I think there may be 24 or 26 REAs in the state of Illinois. In this sense, we are the same. And let's talk about municipal power and REAs. In this sense, we are the same. Both are controlled by their customers. A municipal system is regulated by the political process. If the people of Breeze, Illinois, don't like the way the utility is being run, they go to the polls the next time, they vote that mayor out, they get a mayor in that will do what they want with the utility. REAs are member-controlled, and each member has a vote, and they have meetings where the membership actually determines what the policies of the REA are going to be. So in that sense, we are the same. We are controlled by the people who actually use our product, which is obviously different than investor-owned utilities who are controlled by their boards of directors and eventually by their stockholders. In the way that we function, we are a little bit different. You know, my organization is only a wholesaler, and we sell to the cities which resell. On the REA side, there are entities called Generating and Transmitting Associations, GNTs. Those would be like us. They sell to the individual rural cooperatives who then resell that power. So there are parallels. And in many ways, we are. Our mission is the same, which is reliable power, lowest possible cost. And that component of local control, I can't overstate. We really believe that one of the reasons we've operated as efficiently as we have is that you have the citizens of the city looking over your shoulder the whole time. And if they want something done differently, our mayors usually make sure that it gets done differently. You know, our mayors, their phone numbers are all in the phone book. If the lights go out, I can't tell you how many of them get that phone call at 1 in the morning going, hey, you know, power's off down here. Do something about it. That sort of direct input is, I think, one of the reasons we've been successful.
I wanted to ask you to talk about what deregulation means for your members.
Sure.
Because as we have discussed now a couple of times recently on the show, perhaps people are aware, we are in the midst of deregulation of the investor-owned utilities in the state. It's a result of a law that went into effect in 77.
97.
In 97. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. 1997.
Seems like 77.
It seems like, yeah, a long time ago. Well, that's funny because, you know, what happened is that they're phasing in the industrial users, the biggest ones, went first. And then next year, the residential customers
right.
are going to go. And it's funny because when I know we talked about this when it first happened. And in 1997, 2002 seemed, you know, you who would,
oh,
who,
yeah.
you you know.
We'll worry about that.
Yeah, we'll worry about that later. Well, now it's next year. So so we're about to have it. At any rate, this law affects the investor-owned utilities. They have to.
They were mandated.
They were mandated. Correct. Now, for your members, there, I guess, as I understand it, there's a choice. If they wanted to,
yep.
they could do the same. They could offer the same opportunity to their customers that the investor-owned utilities
yes.
do, to say, okay, choose your supplier. So what exactly does this mean, and what do you think is going to happen as far as your members and deregulation go?
There are a couple of points here, and first let me tell you what the law actually says, because there is a section of the law that specifically deals with municipally operated electric systems and with the rural cooperatives. And the General Assembly acknowledged in the law that there was this component of local control that we just spoke about. And that if the citizens of a city truly wanted to open their system up, then eventually that is going to happen. They also recognized, however, that our reason to function is a bit different, in that we are service providers. We do not have deep pockets, by and large. We don't have tremendous amounts of retained money that we can go out and do huge promotional blitzes for. So they said, we're going to let you folks decide for yourselves by an affirmative action of your councils whether or not you want to be involved in deregulation. That's step one. Now, let me tell you where I think most municipal systems are, which is watchful waiting. Stranded cost recovery, and I'm sure you've been through all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Stranded cost recovery runs out through at least 2006. The market, we're not really going to know what the market looks like until 2006, when stranded cost recovery comes off. We have some concerns about the making sure there's enough generation in the state that there really is a vibrant market. Our municipality has essentially taken this approach. It's not broken right now. Our costs are still low. Our level of reliability is still high. Let's see how the market evolves. We can always get in, but if you get in and things go badly, it's very difficult to reverse course. I believe you would find, and I will not speak for them, but I believe you would find, if you spoke to my colleagues at the rural cooperatives, that their take is essentially the same, although there has been one cooperative which has opted in, and that's over around Paris, Illinois, and they are selling to some people not inside their system, and they are opening those comparable customers up within their system. One of the problems that a municipality has in doing this is, since they were set up as not-for-profit entities to serve their customers, you almost end up with a philosophical problem, which is, do you take resources guaranteed or that have been dedicated to your customers and divert those in an attempt to sell that power elsewhere to make more money then what do you do with that money? And at what risk do you put your own customers? So there are some philosophical questions involved, but the essence of it is that the option exists. It is my view that if the markets evolve and they evolve successfully, that you could well see in 15 years that the need for an organization like mine, and I'm not trying to put myself out of business, but maybe the need for organizations like ours go away because you'll have a vibrant market and individuals will be able to buy power on the open market and they'll be happy. We're not sure how it's going to evolve. And so essentially the municipalities right now are sort of keeping their powder dry.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It seems to me that in that kind of environment, you might feel that there was an even greater need for a broker, and it might make me feel better if I knew I was dealing with someone who was a nonprofit entity.
One of the things that we have found is that even when we do not end up selling power to a municipality, and remember, we can sell power to a couple. My organization can sell power. We can sell power to qualifying utilities. In other words, we can do deals with Illinois Power, and indeed we have. In the hot summers a couple months ago, we were actually selling some power to them because they were a little short in their control area. Hmm. We buy from them. I mean, similar situations. If we're short, you know, we can do short term deals and buy. But essentially, we're really set up to sell to our municipal systems. We recently had one of the municipal systems in the state come to us, and their contract was coming due with their current power supplier. And their current power supplier, they were under a very nice contract, which had gone back 5 years. Well, the markets have changed significantly from 5 years ago. And they were told they were going to see an 80% increase in their wholesale cost of power. Now, that's pretty significant bump. Especially because they would have to revise their retail rates, their residential, commercial, industrial. Everything would have to go up to reflect that. So they came to us. We put together a deal. We provided that to them. They did not end up buying from us, but they called us back and said that 80% went down to 40%. And a 40% increase in wholesale prices over what they were paying is probably about where the market is now. So your point about having an honest broker out there, I think, is correct. And that's one of the functions that we see for ourselves is being this sort of benchmark where at least our members know that they can get it from us at X cents a kilowatt hour, then that's a good fallback for them.
We have about 10 minutes left, a little less on this part of Focus. We're talking with Doc Mueller. He is the Manager of Communications and Public Affairs for the Illinois Municipal Electric Agency. And we're talking about public power and utility deregulation questions. Welcome. We have three people here. We'll try to get them all.
Great.
Let's go to Urbana, line one. Hello.
I was wondering what incentive your customers in your situation have to conserve power, because it seems to me that that's one way for us all to get more power is if we are sensible about how we use power.
Absolutely. Pricing signals are very important. And obviously the ideal world is one where you have an unlimited supply of electricity, which is totally non-polluting. That's just not the way the world is. What we try to do here is we try to acquire the most environmentally responsible forms of power generation we can, understanding, though, that cost is a component of that. We own a piece of a fully scrubbed coal-fired power plant down in Kentucky. My organization, and we're relatively small potatoes in this market. Over the next year, we'll be putting $6 million into that plant as our share of their NOx abatement project. We are obviously bound by Illinois law, and we will meet all of the Illinois environmental regulations in terms of our generation. But you bump into this conundrum, and the conundrum is people want cheap power, and when you properly price it, they often scream bloody murder. Now, you are correct. A proper pricing signal on a hot day in the summer is going to mean that your power on that day is going to be more expensive, and maybe you could find a way to back off of that. It is my belief that as energy supplies tighten, and I do think we're going to see tighter energy supplies, some of those pricing signals are going to be have to be passed on to the end-use customer. And that means that they're going to have the information to make intelligent decisions about how they use power. In the hot summer a couple of months ago, we didn't want to be on the market buying on a July afternoon because power was $2,000 or $3,000 a megawatt hour. That's $20 a kilowatt hour. I may be a decimal point off, but it's expensive. We were asking people, look, do your laundry at night, or do those things you can put off at night. There will be a time, I believe, where you will see real-time metering, where someone can go to a panel on the wall, and it will say, if you run your washing machine now, it's 5 cents a kilowatt hour. And in 4 hours, it's going to be 2 cents, something like that. But people have to see those prices. If they don't see the prices, they can't. It's in the end, it's the end-use customer that has to make those decisions.
Well,
I think you'll see that eventually, but it's been slow coming.
I think we also need to use peer pressure on people. It's one thing for me to run my dryer in the evening. It's another thing for me to when I walk into a big medical clinic in Champaign-Urbana in the hot summer and everybody is dressed for winter, because that looks more professional, women in stockings with suit jackets on and men in coats and ties, and the temperature down to lower than it would be if in the wintertime. All these big customers who are using it irresponsibly, too, in my mind, and I think we need to say to these folks, hey.
I saw an interesting article along this, and maybe this doesn't answer your question, but it's something like that. Hotels in California now are beginning to add energy surcharges, and they are giving people a specific list of do's and don'ts. Don't leave the TV on when you leave your room, sounds like a normal thing to do, but be surprised. You know, only leave one light on, those sorts of things. That's pricing signal, and I think you're right about peer pressure, but that's something that you sort of have to pick up the phone and call somebody and say, why do you do it that way? But I will tell you that big entities like that, they'll see it in their pocketbooks too, and that may change their approach.
I want to try to get at least one more caller. Yep. West Peoria, line 4. Hello.
Hello. I don't mean to get you too far off topic, but I was wondering if some of the members are branching off into other sort of telecommunications endeavors, like installing cable systems or broadband internet access. I had read an article where I believe Muscatine had turned their power company into more of a telecommunications entity. So if you know anything about that, please talk about it.
Briefly, I will. Iowa is ahead of Illinois in that. A number of Iowa municipal systems are involved in telecommunications. Illinois has been a little bit slower coming along. Some are beginning now to look at providing telecommunications options. City of Springfield recently voted to do a cable television study to see whether or not they should get into the business. A number of municipal systems, because they have to deal with the dispatching and the balancing of power around the city, have installed fiber optic networks, which allow them to do that. The nature of a fiber optic network, as I understand it, is that there's often excess capacity on that. It could be that in Illinois it is going to be more likely that cities will install the fiber optics and lease them to willing suppliers, but the short answer to your question is yes, they are looking at it.
One more here, Urbana, line 2. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I have to admit I'm a very cynical person, and when the cable company wanted to reorganize, they called it deregulation, and our cable company costs went up.
Yeah.
So I ask myself, why are these big monopolies, these big corporations, so eager to reorganize? And, of course, they sell it to us by calling it deregulation. But why are they so eager to change from the old monopoly systems? I can't believe its generosity toward their users. It has to be a financial benefit for them.
And I can give you about a minute.
Okay, I'll do this very quickly. First off, I have to tell you that I am an unreconstructed monopolist when it comes to electricity. Until we can figure out a way to store electricity in large quantities, it seems to me that treating it like soybeans, we're always going to be at some risk there. Okay. Having said that, that's my prejudice. Having said that, the investor and utilities really did not want to see deregulation, but they were afraid it was going to happen in a manner that they would not be able to handle. So these are very smart people. They have crafted a bill that will allow their companies to continue to exist and flourish, but it wasn't that they wanted it. They've honestly had to figure out how to make it work. They simply saw the writing on the wall that it was going to happen anyway. But they are very bright people, and their job is to make money for their stockholders, and I believe that they will do that under a newly deregulated format.
We're going to have to stop. I'm certain, though, again, these issues, we'll be talking about them more in the future, but for the moment, we'll have to leave it at that. We want to say thanks very much.
Well, it's my pleasure, David. It really has been fun, and thank you.
Our guest, Doc Mueller, he's Manager of Communications and Public Affairs for the Illinois Municipal Electric Agency based in Springfield.